From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Another Monday, another list of layoffs. And while new home construction is at an all-time low, sales of existing homes are slowly picking up. President Barack Obama is pitching his stimulus package to Congress, but is the GOP willing to play ball? Author and economist Dr. Julianne Malveaux is here now to give us the benefit of her wisdom on the state of the economy. She is president of Bennett College. Hello, Dr. Malveaux.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Dr. Malveaux, it's starting to become a sad refrain, but the national unemployment rate continues to creep up. Roughly 4.6 million people, or about 7.2%, now collecting unemployment checks. California, in fact, leads the pack with a 9.3% unemployment rate. Now, the Golden State is often a predictor, Dr. Malveaux, of what will happen with the rest of the country. So the question is, are we headed for double-digit unemployment rates soon?
Well, that's what we want to avoid at all costs, Tony. And at 7.2% nationally, we've got another, I'd say, 6 months going in the same direction to get even to 9%. It's not likely that we'll go there. If the stimulus is passed quickly and if we move very quickly to pour some cement to get some money in the pipeline. But let's be clear, for many people, the impact of the official 7.2% rate is already double digit. If you count the people who are part-time workers who really want full-time jobs, as well as the people who've dropped out of the labor market, there are some economists who've estimated that the 7.2 is really 13.5.
Well, let's look at some of the job cuts announced by marquee companies already. 5,000 from Microsoft, 7,000 from Home Depot, 20,000 from Caterpillar. The list goes on and on. What could turn this around, and I suppose more importantly, when?
Well, first of all, we've got to get this stimulus package passed. It ought to be passed sooner rather than later. Some of the partisan carping is really unworthy and unnecessary. These people are spending more energy on the stimulus than they did on the bailout. And the fact is that the bailout hadn't done much because it wasn't targeted in the right direction. It was targeted at bankers who have money that they're not lending. On the other hand, something that says, I think what President Obama's plan is to repair 10,000 schools. So you're looking at literally employing people. Now, there's some flaws in going directly with infrastructure, but it is one of the quickest ways to jumpstart. The flaws, of course, have to do with the distribution of jobs and whether women and people of color will get those jobs because they're likely to be union jobs. They go to men and mostly white men. But we need to get some money into the economy. We want to accompany infrastructure jobs, I think, by things like after-school care for kids, which will provide some jobs for younger people, younger women. How about extending library hours? There are a whole number of things that can be done. If you look at the old CETA program, if cities get money in 2 months, you'll have people working in 4 months. That's what's going to keep us from getting to an unemployment rate of 10%.
Well, you know, there's a lot of disagreement about the stimulus package, which at the moment stands at $825 billion. The Senate takes it up tomorrow, the House on Wednesday. The disagreement, though, Dr. Malveaux, seems to be over two things. Number one, how much the package should be. Is $825 billion enough, too much? And who should be helped first? You mentioned infrastructure, but there are those on the GOP side who say it's tax cuts that will stimulate and not spending.
We've done tax cuts. Mr. Bush did tax cuts. Those tax cuts did not work. If you cut someone's taxes, it's not clear that those dollars are going to stay in the system. So the GOP would like to make sure that businesses and others get a tax cut. What the stimulus package, as I see it right now, does is try to move dollars into the economy as quickly as possible. So we've seen the tax cut approach, and it hasn't worked. Let's try something else.
Now, there's also an interesting trend that's taking place now where companies are skipping right past the bankruptcy phase and going straight to liquidation. Circuit City, for example, Mervyn's, Linen and Things as another example. Is this a sign of deepening pessimism, or is this a business trick?
It's a sign of deepening pessimism. Most people would prefer to reorganize if they think reorganization will make a difference. But depending on what their books look like and the resources that they have to put into, I mean, bankruptcy is not a cheap process. You have to believe that you can revive. And I think that in the case of Circuit City in particular, they didn't believe that they could revive the company. They didn't think that they were going to be on the list to get any kind of help, and they probably wouldn't have been. Why, you know, deal with a consumer electronics company? And so perhaps for the sake of their shareholders and others, the liquidation would give people more on the dollar than a bankruptcy and a delayed payoff would.
Now, when you see a company like Caterpillar send 20,000 pink slips, is this an indication, do you think, that there are other companies out there who are likely to have a larger layoff in the very near future?
I think we have to look at any manufacturing company as a possibility for layoff. I think we have to look at every bank as a possibility for layoffs. In a weakened economy, first of all, people aren't purchasing goods and services. Secondly, people are being forced to look at the fundamentals of their infrastructures. And many are saying, we just can't do it this way. Some of these layoffs will be temporary, but many of them will be permanent. We are living in very uncertain economic times, and that's why there should be pressure on the Obama administration, but also on the Senate and the Congress to quickly move to stimulus.
Which is better? If you're in a company that offers you a buyout, let's say, to try to downsize, should you take a buyout or should you wait to be laid off? Which is the better strategy?
It depends on what you've got going on, Tony, but if you wait too long, you won't have that buyout. When you look at most companies, I mean, the first round is got buying people off. By the third round, when they're laying people off, people who are similarly situated get less with a layoff than they might have gotten with a buyout. However, it literally depends on where you are, what you want, what you think you can do. I mean, some people have taken their buyouts, a nice five-figure lump sum, and plowed it into a business they have, or, you know, taken early retirement, or, you know, any number of things that fit their personal needs. Others, by hanging on for another year, really have maintained the lifestyle and the income that they need. So it depends on where you are, but don't be too quick to sniff at a buyout, especially if someone who's, you know, early middle age, 40s, perhaps multi-talented, that buyout might be your nest egg as you look for something else.
And speaking of nest eggs, we know that many retirement funds have been hit very, very hard, and people have to make the decision whether or not to leave the money alone as they continue to watch it shrink, grab it if they are able to, and park it someplace else. What's your idea about the best way to handle that?
People should look at their retirement money very carefully. Most of us have lost about a third of it. The market's down by about a third, and that's been reflected. People who are very careful and had very carefully managed portfolios might have lost a bit less, but everybody's the loser, especially if you had the bulk of your portfolio, your retirement account, in stock. Literally what people have to do is sit with their financial planner to figure out the market will come back, the question is when. And the answer for you is different if you're 40, if you're 55, if you're 62, or if you're 65. The closer you are to that retirement age, the more challenging this climate is. They're taking it out is not a bad idea, but the question is how can you make up some of the value that you lost? You really got to sit down with an investment professional and figure that out.
Now, here in California, we have something odd that's taking place. The budget deficit, well, that's not odd. That's happening all over. But the budget deficit in California is at a critical state, and it may force this state to send out, if you haven't heard about this, IOUs instead of state tax returns this year. I frankly, Dr. Malveaux, have never heard of such a thing. Is this an example of money not being worth the paper that it's printed on?
It's certainly not unusual for California to do these kind of things. There have been, when California has budget shortfalls, they have delayed payments into retirement accounts. There was a period back in the 80s when I was working in the California state system as a professor, when actually I believe we did get something instead of a paycheck one month. So California has tended to be creative, especially with its state employees, but also with others. And certainly this does have an impact. If people were depending on these refund checks to spend money, it will further slow the economy.
It's just a mess. Let me ask you, let's go across the Atlantic for a moment, because in another international indicator, Britain announced late last week that it, too, is now officially, that's in quotes, in a recession. How relevant is that to us here in this country?
Oh, it's extremely relevant. All of our economies are intertwined, and this is something that we frequently want to ignore. But because these economies are intertwined, a downturn there will exacerbate our downturn here. So to the extent there were import-export relationships, all of those things have now slowed.
Are we seeing the end? Well, maybe end is too strong a word, Dr. Malveaux. This is going to be my last question for now, though. Are we seeing a shifting of emphasis in the work structure in America, meaning away from large major corporations into something smaller?
Well, that emphasis has been taking place. That shift, Tony, has been taking place probably since the mid-'80s. The Fortune 500 employs an increasingly smaller size of the labor force. In about 1980, the Fortune 500 may have employed as much as 15-20%. Now it's down to something around 10-12%. Those numbers are round numbers, but it employs a smaller group. So, yes, we see that the smaller businesses have more of an impact, and that is interesting both to the positive and to the negative. It does speak to the entrepreneurial spirit of the American people. On the other hand, oftentimes you're able to send signals through the work that one or two Fortune 500 companies was doing with things like discrimination law and other things. Now, you know, it's just a much more diffuse and more difficult to get a message across.
Let me ask you this, because a lot of what we talk about every day has to do with large companies and large amounts of money, and sometimes people are not quite sure what that means for their individual pocketbooks and wallets. We're going to talk about your ideas about how people can be helped and what they can do during these difficult economic times. So, Dr. Melville, I'm going to ask you to just stick around for a quick second. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and get some of your practical advice for folks who got to figure out a way to live. We'll be right back. This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. When times are tough, we try to cut our expenses and stretch every dollar a bit further. And believe it or not, these gloomy times are actually bringing some good deals if you know how to find them. We just talked to Dr. Julianne Malveaux about a whole laundry list of dismal economic indicators, but what are some of the ways you can make the most of the situation? She's back now to give us a bit of coaching on how to get the biggest bang for your buck. Dr. Malveaux, thanks for sticking around with us.
Good to be with you.
There's something I've noticed lately with these record low mortgage rates. They're impossible to get. Lenders seem to be just as cautious about refinancing. What's going on here, and how do you leverage your situation to get a lower mortgage rate?
Well, the key right now, Tony, is to have a good credit score. That's the key. I mean, banks are being very skittish about lending. We know that rates are lower. But the person with a credit score that's pristine, 750, 720, is going to be able to cut a deal. If you can't cross that 700 mark, you're not necessarily going to be able to do anything. There is room to negotiate, but that room is only there for the people with these great credit scores.
Now, what about credit card companies, though? Can you call a creditor and demand a lower rate? And what if they say no?
If they say no, you have to make a decision. Do you want to tear that credit card up? Or do you want to hold on to it with that high rate? Do you want to take your balance down? And again, the credit card company is going to be most responsive to the good creditor. So if you're someone who's paid your bill on time every month for the past year, maybe you're carrying a bit of a balance, but your rate is 22%, you can call those folks and say, look, I don't think so, and negotiate it down. But if they tell you no, you have to decide what you're going to do. My advice, stop using that card. Find a card, you've got one, or try to get one with a lower rate, but stop using that card and just pay it down. Again, when your balance is closer to zero, they're more likely to negotiate. People talk about negotiating, and negotiating is possible, but you've got to negotiate from a position of strength.
Now, is bartering back?
It's back big time. People, especially people who are cash-strapped, are trading babysitting services for cooked meals and car repairs for other kinds of things. People are doing what they have to do to make the economy work for them. The bartering thing's a great thing. It never shows up in GDP. It doesn't show up anywhere. But people are able to say, if you can do this, I can do that. Sisters are going into their closets and getting some of that stuff out that's been gently worn, as one might say, and taking it to consignment stores. There are people, forgive this phone, there are people who are doing things like swap meets with their clothes. So it is an exciting time for folks who are willing and able to make compromises.
Well, speaking of a phone, it made me think about this, because cell phone companies, cable TV providers, how much wiggle room is there to negotiate for a lower bill with these people?
I think there's a little bit less, but there's some. When you see, here's where people who have long-term contracts get really annoyed. you've signed up for the $59 rate, and then you see on the internet or on television that there's a $39 rate, and you're like, hey, what about me? That's a good wedge for negotiating. Hey, look, I see you're advertising this at a lower rate. I'd like that opportunity. So those are some of the kinds of things that people can do.
Now, I've heard someone, even on our staff, who they'll remain nameless, tried this with the cable company, and this person was told, well, you just need to drop some of those premium channels that you have.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
I mean, you know, they remember, these folks are in it for the money, too.
Well, absolutely. Well, what's another good topic, a tactic for stretching your dollar? Should you stop spending, spend less, go cash only?
Cash only is a good idea, and I tell everybody to slow their roll. Right now, you're getting through the internet, through everything you do, you're probably getting, you know, notices of sales, and some of these sales are pretty tempting. Don't do it. Think about holding on to your cash. Cash is king right now. So you want to make sure you maintain your cash. So, you know, you don't have to spend, and that's one of the ways. Now, people will say, well, gee, what about the economy? But the answer is, what about you? You know, you've got to make sure that you can pay your bills, make ends meet. And so there's just quite a bit that needs to be done.
Now, what if you're just starting out, though, Dr. Malvo, and you need to establish credit right now? Maybe you're coming out of college. Maybe you're 20, 21, 22 years old. Are retail credit cards good or bad to have during this economic crisis?
The credit cards are useful to have, but you've got to be careful. Don't go into too much debt. If you have to, you know, someone's graduating, you've got to get an apartment started. You know, you're going to need furnishings. You've got to get a wardrobe started. You're going to get new clothes. Your job is to do as the best you can with a budget. Let me underline that, with a budget. Please make sure that you don't go crazy. Oh, I need new clothes. Well, how many new clothes do you need? You're going to just have to be frugal. This is not a time to be profligate in your spending. This is a time really to just be careful, even with if you've got a new job or a new apartment. This is a time really to think about anything can happen. And speaking of apartments, Tony, I do want to throw one other thing out. This is a great time for people who have their leases coming up to negotiate with their landlord.
That's an interesting thought. All right, our time has run out. We'll let you get to that phone. Dr. Malvo, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
That was author and economist Dr. Julianne Malvo. She is also the president of Bennett College.